Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America College Baseball Podcast. Along with Jim Schroeder and Hudson Belinsky, I'm John Manuel, your host. We're brought to you by Slugger Nation, at Slugger Nation on Instagram, at Slugger Nation on Twitter. That's Louisville Slugger. All of our college coverage is powered by Louisville Slugger all year and taking you right through Omaha and trying to get in the college baseball spirit. It is difficult in the Carolinas with the weather. But that didn't stop Hudson Belinsky. That didn't stop most of our top 25 teams. It did stop a few of them from playing. Hudson took us off in the southeast this weekend, but for considering that you went to Cornell the last 3 years, it's colder up there, so you've seen worse.
It's summertime right now.
It's summertime for Cornell.
I got to talk to Coach Ford at Cornell during the Virginia Seton Hall game, or maybe it was the Virginia Hartford game, but we talked for quite a while, and apparently this was the coldest recorded month in Ithaca, New York.
Ever?
The coldest recorded February, I should say, ever.
Like going back to like William H. Seward back in his Auburn days? How far is Auburn, New York from Cornell?
Not far. 45 minutes. It's a good spot to catch the New York Penn League playoffs or the end of the game, the year, right when the season gets started.
So. That's my upstate New York reference point. Besides Cooperstown, that's where William H. Seward was from. So goes back to my Civil War affectation. I enjoy studying the Civil War. That's apropos of absolutely nothing. So let's get back to college baseball. I'm sorry. But, you know, a lot of Northeast guys at Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt's still number one. Yeah. We had an Ivy League team at LSU. LSU still number two. Virginia, you did get to see Virginia this weekend, Hudson. We're going to check in with you on the Wahoos. But, Jim, you helped run a lot of the rankings. A little change at the top this week. Not so much one and two. But Virginia and Florida move up in the rankings this week. Texas Tech stays the same. But we moved up UCLA to six and moved down your beloved Houston Cougars. I think it's funny that you like Houston so much, considering you're an NC State alum. And
I've thought about that.
It's the Phi Slamma Jamma connection. You're just paying it back to
three
the Cougars.
Are tied at the hip.
That's it. But but what drove that this week in the rankings, especially with regard to Houston dropping down a little bit?
Well, basically you can't split a series with Columbia. Even though, I mean, Columbia is the defending Ivy League champs. They've been to regionals, you know, a couple times the last few years, but still, you're at home, you can't not win that series. And, you know, I was kind of following those games on Twitter, and they just couldn't shake Columbia ever. I mean, they would take a lead, and Columbia would keep coming back, and you wonder if it was a trap weekend, because they played Alabama last week, now they've got the big Houston College Classic this week, which we'll talk more about, and you wonder if they just saw Columbia on the schedule and thought, all right, this is an easy sweep or 3 out of 4, and they had their hands full all weekend. And, look at some of the other teams we moved up. I mean, Virginia's 10-0 without having had getting to play a home game.
The weather has affected them and North Carolina similarly. Mm-hmm. As two top ACC teams haven't been able to play at home. They've been on scheduled to be on the road, in Virginia's case, the opening weekend, but then kind of forced to go on the road the next two weekends. And North Carolina's split those two series and has lost this weekend to Rhode Island. And Virginia, keeps on rolling.
I'll say it wasn't Murderer's Row that Virginia was playing, but still, 10-0 is 10-0, and like you said, they did play at ECU week one, which is a representative team to play to start the year. And and then obviously Florida's been, I mean, obviously Stony Brook, so we like Stony Brook obviously, but I mean they've had the series win against Miami, and they've just been very impressive to start the year, so we put them up to number four. And and then you got Texas Tech. Does get snowed out in Texas?
Yeah, I mean, all the state of Texas. At least Houston got its games in. So I mean, like they're probably regretting that they got the games.
It seems like Houston and Rice were able to play. So I guess that was the one.
And Texas,
one place. Much to Texas's chagrin.
That's right. But TCU. So the funny thing is, Texas loses at home to a warm weather team.
Yeah, that's what I was. Yeah, when we were talking about, I was like, there's no way. I mean, that's a pretty weak showing by Texas to only score, what, two runs in two games against...
I mean, the Toreros are good,
you can't tell me they're less... They can't handle it any weather any worse than a team from San Diego.
I agree. No, I'm there. The San Diegans, San Diegoans, that should be tougher on them, certainly. See, Hudson, this is my first podcast with Hudson, so he hasn't heard me make that joke every single time the city of San Diego comes up.
Probably work.
But I'll keep on making it work, or trying to make it work. I guess the other thing that impresses me,
impressive.
Jim...
I'm not even mad.
That's exactly. I'm no impressed. The other thing that impresses me about UVA for both you guys, but Hudson, you just saw him this weekend, is that Virginia keeps doing it without Joe McCarthy. Obviously, the injury to their communist-baiting center fielder and junior. But it's a very young team, and they're playing a lot of guys, freshmen and sophomores. So if there were to be a hiccup early when you're not playing at home, you're playing these games, they're supposed to be home games and they're on the road, and it's this cold, you would expect a younger team to have that struggle, but Pavin Smith, we knew was going to be good. I don't think we thought it was going to be 500 good through 10 games.
And he's a serious, serious dude.
And this is a South Florida guy. Both he and Adam Haseley are not like Northeast guys, the usual profile for a lot of these Pennsylvania tough UVA guys.
Pavin Smith is immediately one of the best hitters in this conference, in my mind. I mean, he's hitting the ball hard to the entire field. There's really...
He's slugging 810.
There's
he's
no one
extra base hits.
Even Matt Theis in that lineup, who's gotten off to a really hot start, I would probably still take Pavin Smith over him just offensively. There's really nowhere you can put the ball in the zone that Pavin Smith's not going to be able to go get it. He's really, really good, and he got high praise from Coach Brian O'Connor this weekend. But I think the thing with Virginia is obviously the pitching, and Nathan Kirby lights out again. He struggled a little bit in his first inning with command, but once he settles in, he's as good as anybody. I had a scout tell me that he's ready to play in Double A right now.
Right.
So,
right.
That's just unfair. And then you have Connor Jones, who really didn't have his best stuff on Saturday. He's still 92, 94, bumping 95, and pretty good slider.
Love Connor Jones. Hard not to like Connor Jones.
And that's an off day for him. And then Sunday, Waddell was a little bit under the weather. Had been throwing up about 24 hours before his start, but still went out and gave them four solid innings. And then they had Roberts coming out of the pen, who was just nasty fastball slider guy. Really unhittable. I believe he struck out 8 in four innings. So.
Yeah, I was about to say, see, it seems like we know what Josh Boers brings. We've seen his stuff. We've seen it play in a bullpen. We've seen it play as a starter. Obviously, he's kind of in that Nick Howard, closer role this year, and so far so good there. But to me, the other question with UVA, which is kind of when it comes time for ACC conference, it starts this weekend, conference play, and when it comes time for the postseason, what's their bridge to Boers going to be look like? You expect them to have options, although they have multiple options, whether it's Doherty or Roberts or whomever, and they're quality options.
And I think what you'll start to see is those arms really get stretched out. You're going to see a lot of 7- and 8-inning performances from their starters, and it's not going to be tough to get to Spores in the ninth. But they had another outstanding weekend, and on Sunday I was just really impressed with them. They grinded. They were up against Cornell, my old school, and Cornell had a very strong command right-handed pitcher named Brian McAfee on the bump, who was really, really good. Just buried the ball down in the zone, swing and miss stuff. But they took what was given to them. They pounded and took advantage of a couple mistakes up in the zone in the eighth and ninth inning. Came back and won the game. And even despite giving up a 2-run homer and to tie the game in the top of the ninth, they came back immediately in the bottom of the ninth and won it. So they just do a lot of things that you look for in a top team, and there's a long way to go for them. They did start 6 freshmen this weekend, right. And 1, 2, 3 and 7, 8, 9 in the lineup. So the sky's the limit there.
It's really impressive. Obviously, I mentioned McCarthy being hurt. Laprise is out. Banged up still.
Priest DH'd this weekend.
Did DH this weekend. So not at full strength. So this is a team that's not at full strength, Jim, and they're still playing very well and doing for another team that's close to full strength, but even not 100%. Not quite the injuries that Virginia's has. Florida and the Gators just keep on rolling. They're 10-1. And I just was talking to a scout who just saw them recently and just talked about Now, Harrison Bader, the guy who's who really jumped out at him. I mean, Richie Martin has the hype, justifiably so. Richie Martin is good. Dalton Guthrie, we talked about in the podcast last week, an impact freshman. J.J. Schwartz, another impact freshman. But Harrison Bader with 5 home runs so far. And just, you know, I think this has got a chance to go. I don't think he's going to go as high as Richie Martin in the draft. I think that this one area guy thought that they were similar in terms of their pro futures. And that Harrison Bader's, you know, probably not a center field, more of a fourth outfielder type. But the bat is certainly playing for Harrison Bader. And if he shows this kind of power, it's hard to find college power. And if you do it in the SEC, if he keeps this up from non-conference into the SEC, this guy's going to go pretty good in the draft. And I'm not sure what else has really stood out for you about the Gators so far.
Yeah, I mean, just
Bader
with,
has for me.
Yeah, I mean, with Bader, I mean, I'm talking to Kevin O'Sullivan, you know, before the season, and a couple of different times he's talked about how Bader is a center fielder playing left, and now he's, you know, he's added about 10 pounds in muscle since last year. So this is kind of, you kind of see you thought that, you know, the power might had a chance to break out when you had that with the new balls and everything, but I don't think anybody saw him having, 5 home runs in 10 games or whatever he has. I mean,
they hit 13 home runs as a team, which is really, we just didn't see that the last few years. So credit to the balls. It's not just clearly have talent, but give some credit to the balls.
And it looks like the Logan Shore's little issue last week was hopefully just a blip. It looked like he came back pretty well this week, and
blip piece is good. Yeah. We would like that to be a blip. We'd like for players to be healthy, and then, you know, and we'll really see a nice midweek test. I think of Florida's depth.
That's a great little series with them and UCF.
It is a great one, and UCF's
been. I think UCF and UCLA have been the two most impressive teams for me, at least relative to where we had them at the start of the year.
I kind of like that. I like that assessment because UCF. I mean. It's one run wins, but a win's a win.
Mm-hmm.
So for an American Conference team to go into a weekend series where they've already gone on the road once, but they get to play at home, and they get an SEC team to go on the road to them. First, let's give some credit to Ole Miss. For going on the road, a lot of SEC teams just won't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Credit to Ole Miss.
A&M.
Not even that. I say SEC teams. A lot of Power 5 leagues, whether it's Big 12, ACC, Pac-12, they all won't go on the road. Look who USC, look who the Trojans have played so far this year. It's Oakland, Fordham, and John Manuel University at home. I mean, they really haven't done much in terms of scheduling. So I give credit to Mike Bianco and Ole Miss for going on the road, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, they recruit that area pretty well. And that's one of the reasons you go there is you're going to recruit Florida. And they've done that very well over the years at Ole Miss. J.B. Woodman is one of the current players. He's an Orlando guy as their center fielder. But so credit to them for scheduling it, but... But, Jim, UCF, it was a pretty impressive weekend series for them to win that series.
Yeah, I mean, I watched a couple of those games on the stream. I mean, UCF, that's a really physical team. They've got guys in the bullpen. And I mean, you know, they're kind of – and also we like Craig Finfrock a lot.
That's right.
If I can spit out his name. But and it was kind of – you know, when we were looking at them in the preseason, you kind of wondered – you know, you had Zach Rogers, a senior, the front of the rotation. You kind of wondered how they would – and how the rest of their arms would come together, and that was kind of why we had them a little lower. But it seems like the freshmen have actually been better. They've been they've been the best guys on that staff, and I mean that's and for them to win 2 out of 3 against Ole Miss, and obviously that last game, I mean 3-1-1 game. So I mean obviously it could have gone either way, but you know coming off a week where they go on as we were talking about, they go up to South Alabama and beat Maryland, beat Arkansas, and South Alabama obviously.
Right.
I mean it's. I mean that is a really good early resume, and if they can, I mean if they can split the series with the Gators, I mean that'd be really impressive.
It would be, and we talked about UCLA. The Bruins move up to number 6 this weekend. TCU's at 7.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of weather talk. We already had a little bit of weather talk, but for TCU and Cal Poly, it's a series that at the start of the season, Cal Poly probably would have been a top 25 team if Mark Mathias doesn't get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But so you have TCU, which has played really well. I just talked to a guy last week who saw them in the Arizona State series and could not stop raving about Evan Skoug and just how physical he is. Did a nice job blocking that weekend in Tempe, handling a high-octane pitching
about
staff.
Him coming
right.
into the season.
That's right. I mean, handling a high-octane, good-arm pitching staff. And for that team for those two teams to lose a series completely, Dallas Baptist also did not get to play this weekend, but... That was an intersectional one you really hope to have, and you know that's a tough one because Cal Poly spends a bunch of money. They're not a football school. I'm sure TCU helped defray some of the costs there, but That's a tough one to lose, just to completely lose that series.
Yeah, I was texting with a Texas area scout, and basically I asked him, "You see anything good this weekend?" And he gave me a movie review. it was pretty funny, but I mean, to see that kind of weather in Texas is just not normal. And we also saw games really everywhere. I mean, Arizona State had issues.
Yeah,
like forget it. The East Coast, anywhere north of Florida, there was trouble.
I loved how Mike Lanana noted that even UCLA had a rain-shortened game yesterday.
That's right.
It's like, come on.
I mean, last week, Andrew Checkitz at UCSB, they're sitting there. They were hailed out of their practice at UC Santa Barbara. So,
yikes.
I mean, I used to joke about global climate change being what would level the playing field for college baseball, at least, especially for teams in the north, because, it would warm things up. But, the thing about climate change, and all you deniers can shut off the podcast now, but the thing about climate change is that it leads to more harsh weather, more weather extremes. That's the theory. And I don't know if we're seeing it or not, but I know what the Sierra Club thinks, and my brother works there. So that's my frame of reference. But we mentioned Texas, one of the teams that backed up this week a little bit, Jimmer. Doesn't seem like anybody else really had a quote-unquote bad week except the teams at the back of our rankings. Mm-hmm. How about the teams that came into our rankings this week, A&M and Southern Cal? I kind of banged on the Trojans already for not playing anybody.
That's kind of the theme with both those teams, really. I mean,
right.
I know A&M hasn't played a road game yet. I don't think so. Maybe Southern Cal has played one midweek game or something.
Right, I think it was a midweek game.
I know A&M's played all home games. They haven't really played anybody of note, but in
the most robust schedule for either team.
But we kind of talked about another common thread between both those teams is they get that degree of difficulty is going to go up big time this week with those two the two big tournaments that we're going to be me and Mike are going to be at. So that's going to be fun to watch, and we finally get a real read on these two clubs.
Yeah, I think it's important to get a read on both clubs because they really haven't played anybody, of any note. Now, we did have A&M. Which Ivy League team did they play again this weekend?
They played Dartmouth.
So I wanted to – now, Hudson was in the Ivy League the last 3 years, doing some associate scouting up there. He wrote our Ivy League preview.
Yeah.
These Ivy League teams, Columbia, Dartmouth, Princeton, none of these teams went out there and got blown out this weekend. Columbia went on the road and split a four-game set with a number three team of the country. Who was your preseason Ivy League pick, and what allows these teams to start off the season this strongly and this, playing this respectably against these top tier teams?
Well, it's interesting because there are more strict rules on when those teams can actually start playing.
Right.
So I know Cornell got their weekend or their start last weekend, and because of that, they had to take a week off in March. So it sort of seems like that's a different approach.
In terms of like a practice time or in terms of like starting
your schedule? They have to sit out a weekend in March. And so it's a different approach, trying to get to see the ball a little earlier, get outside a little bit. But, in that league, you'll see a lot of players who have tools but are kind of missing just one thing.
Right.
Or just have one standout tool. So, in any given day, you might have, a hard-throwing pitcher or somebody who can really spin the ball. There's always something there.
Right.
I wouldn't pick any of those teams to consistently compete or, over the long haul. They wouldn't compete in a power conference.
Right.
But any given day, you can see them winning a game. Dartmouth is obviously a one of the better programs in that conference.
Probably the most consistent program in terms of winning in the Ivy League. And has sent some players on the pro ball of late. I mean, Joe Sclafani is a personal cheese ball of mine, sticks out in my head.
Oh, yeah.
It's a guy who's and obviously Kyle Hendricks in the big leagues for the Cubs.
Yeah, and there are more guys who will be drafted on that team. They're missing Bo Sulzer, who's a hard-throwing righty who I believe had Tommy John, some kind of arm issue for sure. But then they have the Concato brothers, Michael and Lewis. I always mix them up. The younger one, the sophomore, is actually a little bit better right now. But both have draft potential, low 90s guys with some feel for spin, and at least the younger one has a pretty filthy changeup. So big power body guys. their pitching is always going to be strong, and they have strong up the middle defense. So they're a team that can definitely compete. It wouldn't surprise me at all if they won that league.
Right.
I just went with Penn because I think they brought the most back in terms of, you know, raw stuff in the rotation, right. And then they bring back a pretty solid recruiting class as well. So.
And Penn went down to Stetson again, a warm weather school. Mm-hmm. You know, didn't get swept. Won one of the three games. Mm-hmm. Not a bad. To me, that's quite a good start mm-hmm. for a team like Penn. And none of these teams ever play games at home before what. Late March, early April, if at all?
I think last weekend, the first Ivy League home games were last weekend of March was when they first got started. And you really don't start to see it consistently until April. So there's differing approaches for these schools. Some of them like to play mid-majors around the East Coast,
right.
And kind of build up some confidence and just get outside. And then some of them prefer to go down to the Power Conference schools and get their teeth knocked in a little bit and, and you know, really figure out, you know, who they have, what they can do, and challenge themselves a little bit. So,
and I always wonder about that from the school. To me, I have to imagine a big part of that's the academic part of it. Like how much of that workload can they balance, and when there's their spring break and mm-hmm. and those kind of things. Can you see Dartmouth's going out to California for a week coming up? Mm-hmm. Princeton's pretty much always on the road, but it seems like they hug the East Coast a little more mm-hmm. Than Dartmouth has in recent years. So it does seem like it's a school-by-school approach.
And they don't have athletic scholarships, but what they do have is pretty good boosters.
Right.
So I know Rich Booth flew down Cornell and Virginia to this tournament this weekend. He's a big booster of both schools. And actually, I think he bought dinner for them all on Sunday afternoon. They're all hanging out after a tightly contested 5-4 game.
Hashtag NCAA violation, I believe.
I don't know if he actually did. But
plausible deniability.
I mean, I didn't get that, but I know he's a big booster of them, and I hope I don't get anyone in trouble.
You're not. You're good. I'm just giving you a hard time.
But, yeah, in general, you know, that league is what it is. You're going to see some tools, but there's a reason you're not at the Vanderbilts or the Stanfords or the UVAs.
I was about to say, it seems like if you don't have that glaring hole in your game, that tool that's a minus, that kind of thing. If you're a player like a Will Toffey, you're at Vanderbilt, or you're going to go to UVA or North
a guy
Carolina
like Garrett Wheatley this year in the draft, who's I'm not sure if he's got a perfect SAT, but it's pretty darn close. Maybe a 2,300 three-pointer. Yeah, so that guy's committed to Wake Forest.
Right.
You know, when you have that kind of talent, you're going to go to one of these really good schools, either down here or the Vanderbilts and Stanfords, yeah.
And, Jibber, we kind of glossed over a little bit A&M and USC. We talked a little bit mm-hmm. about their schedules, but let's talk about the actual teams that just came in here. And A&M did win this series. For all of our talk about Dartmouth, they did beat Dartmouth, and they beat them fairly handily.
Yeah, they had a close call on Friday, but yeah.
But this is a pretty experienced club, especially in the infield. I'm looking at guys like Nada Brock and Alamond, and I think the guy who jumps out for the most for the BA fan is going to be Nick Banks, mm-hmm. the college national team what he did last summer. But it's a talented pitching staff. I think you kind of always expect that of a Rob Childress club. They're going to pitch. They did that when he was a pitching coach at Nebraska. They've done that in his head coaching here at Texas A&M, but to me, what kind of stands out is that this is a fairly diverse offense, potentially, and they've got a little power there now, Ronnie Gideon. What jumps out to you? I like their infield the most.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I like the pitching is definitely a strength. I mean, I know Alamond was a guy that was good last year, and, you expect them to be able to, I mean, like you said, pitching is what jumps out for them. They had three good starts this weekend, and it's kind of same with USC. They've been pitching really well. I think that's kind of been the biggest. I mean, what kind of what's gotten them where they are? But I mean, this will be a big week for them to see what they can do against teams that are more at their level. We'll say
it's going to be really interesting to see what they do with Gideon because he's hit three home runs, but he's also booted some balls defensively. He was taken out of a game this weekend. By A&M midweek in the middle of the game, kind of Bobby Cox, Andrew Jones style, but I don't think it was because he was dogging it. I think it's because he just wasn't defending. So it's going to be a challenge because you look at the stat sheet, and Gideon's got 6 errors in 9 games, .750 fielding percentage, not going to get it done. But when you look at this team, I mean, he's one of the key power guys on this team. He's already hit 3 home runs. They've hit 16 as a team. So if you're gonna play this modest early season competition, we say this all the time. We've been saying it for 8 years in this podcast. Dominate it, and they have dominated it. So kudos to them on that.
And they also have this pretty good midweek matchup coming up against Dallas Baptist. And Dallas Baptist, I know, has a
team that cannot wait to play.
Very well rested.
A pretty good knuckleballer midweek guy, a guy named Calhoun.
Nice.
I think his name's Jay Calhoun. He's the son of a big leaguer. But a guy who can pump it into the upper 80s and has a pretty nasty knuckleball and some feel for it. So that'll be a nice test for A&M. They'll see if they can put runs on the board against a club like that. And then, obviously, Jim's going to see them this weekend against some pretty solid schools in Nebraska, Houston, and Baylor. So
I did not know they had a knuckleballer midweek, the Dallas Baptist.
For
That's
sure.
interesting. If I knew it, I forgot. But, yeah, they're going to say that it's a big week for A&M. Jim, you also mentioned you're going to be down there in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
So you got Texas A&M, Nebraska, Houston, Baylor. And for all these schools, it's the last tune-up week. Mm-hmm. Now, Baylor got swept at home this weekend. In its series against Cal State Fullerton. Nebraska, a little bit
Nebraska's
of a slow start coming back.
Yeah, Nebraska's kind of rebounded a little bit. They won a series at Loyola Marymount, who's a quality team. And, it's going to be a fun 3 days out there.
LSU going to be there, Hawaii. Now, LSU's the prohibitive favorite, and usually they draw very well. That event draws well when LSU's involved. To me, LSU's the favorite. I mean, I know you love the Cougars. What else are you looking for out of these teams besides A&M getting tested?
I'm definitely curious to see Nebraska. I want to get a look at Ryan Bolt in person. First time I've gotten to see them.
That was a weird one last summer when he was, because he was here for trials for a USA team, and then when he didn't make the team, that was a strange one to be quite frank. I did not understand how he did not make that team. He seems like he's kind of taking that out on some teams this year because this kid's physical. He runs. I didn't really see a negative with Ryan Bolt last year. Not a glaring one. I mean, clearly there's polish and development to happen, but physically you can see why this guy was a big deal out of a Minnesota high school. And yeah, he's probably the one player I would look forward to seeing the most in this entire
tournament. And LSU's the two freshmen, Jay Godfrey and
Lang.
Yeah, blanked on his name. I'll see what those two guys can do. You know, first real test for them. Baylor's a little. You know, They swept some. I can't remember what was it. Pepperdine.
I think it was Pepperdine.
Yes, week one. I know they've kind of. I think they've dropped off a little bit since then. But get a look at them, and it'll be. I mean, it's gonna be a fun field.
They were competitive this weekend, the last game, but Cal State Fullerton really did. We didn't rank the Titans this week, but by far the best week of the year for the Titans. Not just because they swept it, but because they scored some runs.
Yeah,
Fullerton hadn't scored any runs all year, and they put up 10 and 11 the first two games of the series against Baylor. So yeah, Baylor it was at Cal Poly that they had won that series, and
that was home
against Cal Poly.
That was it.
And they won a series against Kent State, so it's been a good start for Baylor. So you kind of did not see the sweep coming, but it's tough to go on the road at Fullerton, and they were swept in that series, so that's one of the other ones that we'll look for. And the Dodgertown Classic,
that's going to be outstanding.
Mike is in Columbia today, hoping to get a last game in of the Clemson-South Carolina series. We haven't discussed that one much here on the podcast, just two games, and not a whole lot has been decided in that one.
Yet.
They've split it, and clearly the big thing is Clemson came out and won the first game, and any win by Clemson in this series in recent years is news.
Yeah.
And they did it with power, a couple home runs from Weston. They've played very well to date this year. South Carolina comes back in the second game. Weinkoop kind of pushed back from Friday's start and pitches very well.
Mm-hmm.
And the second game, what's been your takeaway from that series so far, Jim? Or anything standing out to you?
I was talking up Will Crow last week, so seeing him get knocked around was a little surprising.
You're never going to be criticized by me for talking up Will Crow.
Yeah, but I mean, see Jack Weinkoop, obviously that was a really impressive outing. I mean, Chad Holbrook likes likes his experience. He knows how to pitch in big games, and so that was a big deal to get him going on Saturday. And certainly wonder. I watched most of that Friday game. Clemson takes the big lead early on Crow, and South Carolina starts coming back. They get the think, forget who it was. They hit a 3-run home run, and you know they had another rally going. I think they had the bases loaded and 2 outs, and I think it was Kyle Martin hits a ball that would have been a base hit, and instead it hits Max Schrock, who's the base runner between first and second. That ended the inning, so that would have, I think that probably would have been 2 runs, made it, in, I think, an 8-6 game, if memory serves. But
I think it was Connor Bright with that Bright, home run.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But anyway, that really stunted their momentum, and then Wilson hits another home run, and Clemson kind of catches its breath. But, and yeah, the Gamecocks, that's what they do, come back and win the Saturday game in Greenville. So.
And they clearly are, you know, they haven't really been messing around with Tyler Widener, their closer. No. They went to him early against College of Charleston in that series. I think he pitched 2 1/3, 2 2/3 in one of those games. He goes 2 innings.
Yeah, they can stretch him out, because I remember I saw him in the regional last year when I was there. He threw a game. He threw like 6 innings in a game.
Right.
And they were talking about starting him before the year. I think they thought about making him the Sunday. They said he was going to be the Sunday starter or the closer. So they've opted for the closer. But that he's a guy that can do a lot of things for you.
Well, guys, we've seen a lot of you guys have seen some games. I still haven't been to a game yet because of weather and kids. I can't get the kids to go to any of these super cold games. But we do have a lot of baseball around here this weekend. Now, we'll all be traveling. Mike, as we said, going to Dodgertown Classic. Who's in that again, Jim? It's a good series.
UCLA, TCU, Vandy, and the Trojans.
Southern Cal. So that's about
three top 10 teams. That's and loaded. Number 25.
That's right. It's probably the best tournament of the year. I mean, in terms of quality of play.
No, you're never going to do better than that.
No.
And it's going to be fascinating kind of watch what Vanderbilt does this weekend. We actually have a question on Twitter about Vanderbilt's big three draft-wise, where they're going to be going in the draft. And it's talking about Swanson, Fulmer, and Buehler. Well, Dansby Swanson, to me, is the safest bet of those guys. He's a position player in the middle of the diamond. He's athletic. He's played well to date this year. I mean, there's no downside, really, for me with Dansby Swanson. I liked him out of high school. He was more of a basketball player for a lot of his career for scouts. Not more of a basketball player, but he split his time, really, between basketball and baseball. So he wasn't totally dominating showcases because he wasn't always there playing basketball. The guy controls the strike zone. He's athletic. He was the best player on the field, I thought, last year in Omaha. I'm on him. I think everybody's on him.
And then the issues with Carson Fulmer are that people think he's going to end up in the bullpen, and I tend to agree with that assessment just because...
It's energetic. Yeah. It's an energetic
delivery. That's a nice way to put it.
Yes. If you like him, he's energetic. If you don't like him as much, if you think he's a bullpen guy, he's got lots of effort.
So. Yeah, and the thing is, though, he's pitching really well as a starter. This weekend, 11 strikeouts in 6 innings. That'll do it. Just 2 hits allowed. And so I think there's a chance that somebody will take him and give him a chance to start. Maybe not this year. Maybe use him as a bullpen guy just with the innings later this in the year. But
Walker Buehler hasn't pitched yet this year. And I'm going to keep calling Buehler. I keep hearing it's Buehler like Ferris. Buehler. So I'm sticking with Buehler until somebody tells me I'm wrong.
Yeah,
but he hasn't pitched yet, and it will be a madhouse of scouts anyway in LA this weekend because of all the teams that are going to be there. But I got to imagine that if Buehler does start, and they talked about using him this weekend, hasn't happened yet. If he does, it's going to be controlled. It's going to be 3-4 innings, that kind of thing. We'll see. And then who do you push out of the rotation? Because right now Kyle Wright's been pretty good, and so has John Kilichowski. So. I'm interested to see what they do, what Vanderbilt decides to do with pitching staff this weekend.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear to me that Kilichowski and Fulmer are your 1-2 for now. And whatever you get out of Buehler is going to be gravy. I think we'll probably see him in a short stint start on Sunday is my guess.
Right.
Talking to Coach Scott Brown last week, he said that they were pretty close with him. He was kind of up in the air for this weekend, and... He didn't anticipate him going past that California trip without getting in there at some point. So I would be surprised if we don't see anything of Buehler this weekend.
I think that'd be a real big surprise. Last year, Tyler Ferguson was a pretty steady starter for them, Jim. He threw 77 innings. He made 15 starts. Mm-hmm. He's got 14 walks this year. He's got the thing.
Yeah.
Or if he doesn't have the thing... He's got something
to approach. Didn't get anybody out in yesterday's, or was it Saturday's game?
So that you think that would ding their depth a little bit, but they started Hayden Stone midweek more just, I think, to get him a little bit back on track.
He's had a little hiccups here.
He has. Obviously the slider is always going to be there for Hayden Stone. For anybody who's like that, you got to throw some fastballs every once in a while. Mm-hmm. And So he's got to command the fastball a little bit better. Just throw more consistent strikes with that. But Sheffield's got a big arm.
Sheffield's been really good, too, it seems like.
Yeah, and Ben Bowden's been outstanding out of the bullpen. Bowden was really hard.
Outrageous this weekend. It blew his 8 strikeouts in 3 innings.
Yeah, throwing very hard. I've heard some 97s on him this year. I mean, like, he's... I might be mixing him and Sheffield up. Sheffield, I heard, has touched 100 this year. So, I mean, like, the velocity readings...
Sheffield was upper 90s in the summer. And
the velocity readings on their pitching staff, on their bullpen, have been outrageous this year. So this is with Stone and Ferguson struggling.
We haven't even mentioned
and
Pfeiffer.
And no Buehler. Yeah. We haven't even mentioned Pfeiffer. So this is just the depth writ large for Vanderbilt. And all things push come to shove, that's why they're number one coming into preseason. And they're going to get a good test this weekend, but, I mean... there are not many teams that can weather all these things we've talked about of having two of your returning starters. I mean, I know Buehler didn't always start on the weekend last year, mostly midweek. But you're taking two of your returning starters who you project in your rotation, and you get nothing out of one, and the other one's got the thing. And they're just kind of rolling on. You know, no big thing. They have plenty of other options, and their bullpen's outstanding, even with Stone struggling. So that's going to be a great series, a great weekend in L.A.
Offensively, Will Toffey has been outstanding as a true freshman to come
really
into that league. And I mean, to get a spot right away, just to get time is impressive. But he's really hit the ball hard. And
the thing that sticks out, I think, about Vanderbilt and Toffey is part of this, is they're physical in the middle of the lineup. You know, they are physical, whether it's Swanson. Brett Weisman's not huge.
Wiseman,
but Kendall, exactly. Kendall can really run. Brian Reynolds can really hit. Xander Wheel's not off to a huge start, but he's doing better than he did last year.
Hit a grand slam this week. I feel like he hit 2 grand slams this weekend.
He hits 15 RBIs. I wouldn't be surprised if he hit 2.
There's a wheel, there's a way.
I like that. But you know, this whole team, as a unit, they're almost half as many walks as strikeouts offensively. So it's a mature lineup with some physicality and different ways to beat you. They can steal bases. Not maybe as they have in past years, but you know, Wiseman and Swanson, but they both run well, especially for college players. They run very well.
Oh, yeah.
And like you said, I mean, obviously Kendall has that dynamic dimension if he can get on base a little bit more consistently. So there's a lot of ways this team can beat you, and I'm just impressed by their depth this early in the year. So
yeah, I think their whole bench would be starters elsewhere. I mean, even in this conference, even in the SEC, it's really absurd with some of the depth they have.
That was CollegeFan03's question to us on Twitter. You can follow all of us. He's at Jim Schoenert, BA. Hudson is at Hudson Belinsky. Not a lot of competition for that one, apparently.
No.
I'm at John Manuel, BA, and Mike is at Mike at M. Lanana, LANANNA. So we're trying to figure out which nickname will stick most for Mike Lanana. Lanana Hammock. I'm not sure if that one's going to really work, but I think I just prefer the Muppet Show song. But I will not sing it to leave that out. Jim, or anything else you want to touch on? I know we also talked about Georgia Tech maybe getting ranked. That's
we've talked about them. And we like that's a nice little sweep of Indiana State.
Nevada, Tulane, Florida Atlantic.
We've got some Nevada believers in the office, so I would expect they'll make an appearance as long as they keep it up.
We do have Nevada believers in the office. I'm not sure that I disagree with the Nevada believers. But
just beating Pacific is not the...
That's not the way you get in the rankings for us. That's one way to put it. Pacific, unfortunately for Ed Sprague and for old Blue Jays fans who are fans of Ed Sprague's, 0-10 for the fighting Gio Bruces. Florida Atlantic's got some nice wins. 1-2 out of 3 against Ohio State. You know, we kind of talked about the Ivy League earlier. This will have to be another podcast with some Big Ten baseball because you've seen some of that as well.
For
sure. Lately, Hudson, but,
saw some Rutgers this weekend, yeah.
See, I don't even think of Rutgers as big. You saw Illinois is what I was thinking.
I saw Illinois, yeah.
Now, how was Rutgers? I know I think of
Rutgers,
Illinois. I like Illinois.
Rutgers can compete. They've got some pitching, and they have some very strong college hitting with guys who have some line drive ability in Mike Carter, Tom Marcinczyk, D'Annunzio. On the mound, they have a at least 6'8". You're just looking at him, a kid named Kyle Driscoll, who's a redshirt sophomore, a guy who's pounding the zone upper 80s with late-breaking slider, and then Wake Forest transfer, Mark McCoy, left-handed pitcher, who just fills the zone, low 90s guy, probably a draft guy this year, kind of a tweener for some scouts, but that's a team that's going to compete right away in that conference. And then, you know, Illinois, I only got to see them one game and was fortunate enough to see Tyler Jay throw.
And it wasn't his best day. He actually threw one in the dirt that I'm not sure if it was called a wild pitch or a pass ball, but it allowed the game-winning run to score in the top of the ninth against Ball State. But you know, showing four pitches, just nasty stuff. And then Drayson Johnson was just an outstanding upper 80s left-handed pitchability guy. So I think that pitching staff is going to be as competitive as anyone in that conference for sure.
Right. I think preseason we picked, well, there were a lot of teams to pick, but Maryland was our preseason pick. But I think we picked, what, four regional teams?
We had four, yeah. We had them, the Terps, Nebraska, Michigan, and the Illini.
And I could see Michigan State.
And we like Michigan State, too.
I like Michigan State. I kind of like Ohio State. I kind of like Indiana. I don't think any of those teams stink. You're looking right now.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, I'm just looking at it, you know, the thing that has to happen for that league to get four teams is it has to make sure that the bottom of the conference doesn't drag the top down.
Kill your RPIs.
So the Penn States, where really Coach Cooper's really fighting just a talent drain that was apparent when he got there. Mm-hmm. Northwestern, you know, to me, that's the program that you see so many private schools do well, and you see so much talent out of the Chicagoland area. You know, what does Northwestern want to be athletically, I wonder? I mean, I guess they're content to be decent at football. I know they've hired Chris Collins for their basketball program. But that's a school that's never gone to the NCAA basketball tournament.
Yeah.
Men's basketball. Never. Mm. Not once. How hard is that? Come on. Come on, Northwestern.
I mean, I just think in terms of baseball, it's
they're
harder for a private school like that to succeed, especially when you're talking about keeping guys in state. I mean, if you're staying in state, Illinois is for you.
Right.
It's really not much of a competition.
And most of those top players just have been going to Louisville. Right.
Yeah, Louisville.
And Louisville's done a great job of recruiting Chicagoland. Really, Iowa, I guess, right now is the other story in that league. They're 7-1. You know, it's been a lot of schedule hoo-ha for them, which has been challenging. But, you know, Rick Keller did a great job. He's done a great job wherever he's been. I expect he's done a nice job of making Iowa more competitive there. So I feel like that league is off to a pretty decent start. It's really going to be up to the teams like the Minnesota, which started off 0-7, but has won its last three. The Northwesterns, the Penn State, Purdue, exactly. Just so they're not some really butt ugly records at the back of that conference for it to get four teams in. So, good stuff, guys. This was fun. Good college baseball podcast. Anything else that you guys wanted to add, Hudson? I know you saw some other teams, but I feel like we want to save some for the
website. I mean, I'm just excited to. A couple weeks ago, I got to see my first, at least watch it on TV from this area, Duke, North Carolina basketball, and I'm excited to see that this weekend on the diamond. I'm sure it's just as hectic, and everyone gets just as excited, right?
That's it. Well, they bring in Michael Machuella if he pitches Friday, and I do one inning Sundays, and he come to College Game Day on Saturday, or will Sky Bolt be at College Game Day? Somehow, I doubt it, but it will be interesting to see. The ACC does start conference play,
yeah,
Jim.
That's the first major conferences, I believe. It's not the most thrilling slate this weekend. We do have Miami and Louisville gets to open its ACC era hosting Miami, so that's going to be cool for them. But
and very cool from a weather standpoint for Miami, yes, which I'm sure does not want to see cold temperatures to start off. Miami would rather be the host team there anytime, but especially in mid-March. I mean, it's been a little cool, not mid-March, early March. It's been a little cool in South Florida until this weekend. The scout I was talking to down there talked about how cold it had been in Florida. So it's been cold everywhere. I'm not sure how you're going to get around the weather.
I don't know if I buy that. I mean, we talked about it earlier, being from the Northeast.
That's right.
You're lucky if it's 10 degrees in Ithaca, New York right now.
That's
so
right.
There's a lot of, and obviously it's not pleasant being outside in 35 and, you know, overcast, but you know, I'll take it.
Yeah, exactly.
Baseball's being played, and you know, you can still do it.
Clemson and NC State, that might be the best series in the league.
I'm excited about that one, too.
We'll kind of see what, obviously, Clemson's got to finish this weekend, but NC State got Logan Ratledge back on the field this weekend in terms of playing defensively, so kind of see where that goes. But, I mean, to me, that's a series that if Clemson wants to be who they want to be, they have to win this series on the road, Jim. Mm-hmm. They have to go to NC State and win that series, you know. That's what, if you want to be a top 25 team and a regional host, you win the road series as many as you lose. You dominate your home schedule in general, and you win series on the road. You don't win them all, but you win as many as you lose. And for Clemson to do that, I think it's a pretty big game for them today against South Carolina, but more importantly, really, is the weekend and going on the road against NC State and winning a series that on the road they should be favored in that series, don't you think?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, State's a young, they've got some talent, especially on the in the lineup. They're a young team that's going to have some ups and downs, and kind of when you're talking about being able to, you know, the importance of winning the series against teams below you. I mean, the team that jumps out over the last couple of years, and I hit on this over the weekend, was Oregon.
Right.
Now, the last 2 years, they didn't win any series against the regional team.
That's and yet a they huge were,
series. 2 years ago, they got to be a national seed, even though they were not a, they hadn't won a single series against the, like I said, against the regional team. And then they didn't last year either, and they were, I think they were a two seed in their regional, and now this, so, and then, yeah, like you were saying that, so going on the road to beat UCSB is not not insignificant.
It's not. We should have probably talked about it a little bit more because they went on the road for that series. A, pupil loses to teacher in Andrew Checkets versus George Horton. But second of all, they beat Dylan Tate. They waited him out. They grinded him out. And offensively, Oregon looks deeper.
They put up some numbers.
It's a deeper team, I think, and that's what stands out to me. They're not necessarily doing it all with just it was Sean Chase mashing as they kind of did last year when he got hot, really boosted their offense. But there's something going on with Oregon's baseball team this year that hasn't happened there. You know, this has been a team more on the cusp. I thought that was a pretty impressive series win for them. I like UC Santa Barbara's club. I like the Big West. The top three teams of the Big West, to me, are all pretty good. So that was a big one from Oregon. And we talked about in the rankings, Florida State's series winning against UNC Wilmington was a pretty good one as well. But that Oregon series, actually at UCSB, I'm glad you mentioned that. That's probably the best series that Oregon's had on the road in the last 2-3 years.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of scary to think that Cole Irvin really isn't at full strength right now. I believe he went 3 innings this weekend. So to think that you could have him potentially as a horse in your rotation going 6-7 innings later in the year, that's just going to make their bullpen that much stronger.
And like Josh Norris was out there last weekend for doing a bunch of stuff for us, but one of the things he did was see that team, and he wrote about their bullpen. Clevenger's not really at full strength either. He's not throwing with the kind of velocity that has been seen out of him in the past. But, you know, 6 good innings on the road by David Peterson this weekend. I think we have very high expectations for him, probably not as high as Andrew Checkets, I mean, not Andrew, as George Horton has for him, but, I mean, like, that guy should be a stud. I mean, this is a talented club, and they have a little secret stash in their lineup with the Phil Craig St. Louis, I believe is a Quebecois. I know he's Canadian. I know he's Canadian. I'm shocked he's not playing hockey somewhere, Jim. That really should be. That's a whole other podcast for you guys. But you know, the Sunday game, they even benched Chase. It just played Susnara, and I guess they're not. So this is the guy who led the Pac-12 in home runs last year. Really not contributing, and they're off to a great start. So I think it's important that you brought that up. Nice job by Justin Hockamy to finish that off for UC Santa Barbara this weekend. They needed to not get swept. Hockamy goes 8 scoreless, and they avoid the sweep in that series. But
yeah, one of the stronger pitching performances of anyone this weekend from Hockamy.
Yeah, it's it's a pretty good club at UCSB as well. Pretty good podcast. I'm going to say it's week 3 of the season. I think we're going to warm up as the weather warms up. So
for sure.
Next time we'll bring Mike Lanana in here. We'll see all of you guys hopefully at a ballpark this weekend. Don't forget that all of our college coverage of Baseball America is brought to you by Louisville Slugger. Go to @SluggerNation on Twitter or on Instagram. Jim will be in Houston. Mike Lanana will be in Los Angeles. I'll actually be in Arizona this weekend for some spring training, but also my first game ever at High Corbett Field. Nice. I'll be at U of A on Friday night, and I believe there's an Arizona State game I'm going to squeeze in Saturday or Sunday, but I've got to be in Scottsdale during the day, Saturday and Sunday, so and a red-eyed back, so I'll be back for the podcast nice, bright, and wide-eyed next Monday, hopped up on a little caffeine. So until that podcast, for Hudson and for Jim, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you next time. So long, everybody.